Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we are, the 16th day of January 2014. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you'll find entree into the chat room. And you are certainly welcome to join in that conversation. Folks will be wandering by presently. Jan and Sergi are already in there with me. Hi, y'all. And more are on the way. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom. It's free, it's easy, and you are more than welcome to attend and participate. It sort of adds a multimedia, multi-layered kind of... Yeah, you get it. Also, at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, as you know, you will find the Listen Live button. Other listening alternatives are easy to find at WhiteRoseSociety.org/Kincaid, KINCAID.HTML. That's the subdomain at White Rose Society for this program. And, of course, if you are on some sort of iDevice, smart device, Android device, we heartily recommend both Stitcher Radio app and TuneIn Radio. Also, at the website, and you know I got to say this, you will find the PayPal button and the traditional mail address, the traditional mailing address being The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, 318, Beckley, WV, 25801. If you want to avoid using PayPal in order to help keep things going here, that's where you send checks and money orders, which are not made out to Bob Kincaid, but are in fact made out to The Horn or Head On Communications, because that's how we pay our bills. And I must say thank you very much to those of you who have who use the mailbox route, because I hear from Boss Man Wayne, who is always happy to put his hand in the mailbox and not come out with a handful of spiders. Thank you very kindly. We try to raise about $150 an evening. We got out of the hole last night thanks to something that Bob in Baltimore got started and a whole bunch of you followed up on. Thank you very kindly. Bills were waiting to be paid. And, of course, we have a fundraising goal tonight, $150. And Paul from Parts Unknown sent a note this evening saying, I'm offering up a challenge for the rest of the week. I want to get a night of fundraising out of the way. So I'm offering a $75 challenge and will match dollar for dollar up to $75, making one night's fundraising if this challenge is met. My best, says Paul, to the Horn family. And we enjoyed our holiday Paulmans so very much. Those things are just yummy. And labor intensive, but tack-on, they're delicious. Oh, they are. A real taste treat. And so hopefully, maybe sometime in the future, Paul will pull together another batch of Paulmans, and if you haven't tried them yet, you will, perhaps. Who knows? Try them. You'll like them. So, yes, there's $75 on the table. That means that if some combination of you put forward $75, then Paul will in turn match it, and we'll get tonight taken care of, which would be wonderful. This is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. And I tried, honest I did, I tried really hard today to find stuff, and I got some. I don't know if I'll have any success in getting to it under the current set of circumstances, but I tried really hard to find stuff that was not related to the ongoing West Virginia coal-related chemical disaster that is underway and is presently making its way down the Ohio River. The 60-mile-long plume of methyl cyclohexane methanol has now passed Cincinnati. It's on its way to Louisville. It's expected there sometime tomorrow. I checked in with our correspondent from the Free State of Louisville, Corey, who informed me, and well, I'll just go right to the source. He sent me a link from WDRB.com. Headline, Tainted Water from West Virginia Chemical Spill Now Expected in Louisville by Friday. Water from the West Virginia chemical spill is now expected to reach Louisville Friday morning instead of Thursday night. On Wednesday, Louisville Water Company scientists were testing the water in Cincinnati where intake valves were closed as a precaution. As I said before, that just reminds me of, you know, welcome to the 21st century. We had such hopes. We had such ambition. And now we find ourselves in a position where it's more like a medieval citadel closing its gates and pulling up the drawbridge against some wandering horde of plague bearers. And we know why. We do. We know why. Yeah. Conservatism. Anti-regulatory teabaggery. Republicanism. Capitalism. The free market. All of the above. That's just... There is a molecular component of all of those things floating in amongst the methyl cyclohexane methanol as it wends its way down the beautiful river. Isn't that what Ohio was said to mean? Beautiful river. Which has been turned into a tawdry mess by, that's another program. But, yeah, Water company in Louisville says that methyl cyclohexane methanol poses no threat to the local water supply, and they have no plans to shut down the intake valves in Louisville. And then this part. Officials say they're not concerned because the water goes through treatment plants before flowing into customers' homes. Okay, just a little show of hands here. It's radio, but there's magic involved. How many people are kicking furniture right now? Let me read that again. Officials say they're not concerned because the water goes through treatment plants before flowing into customers' homes. What the do you think that... Don't flag stag and not pull Brazilac? See, this is a little bit of anti-hillbilly bigotry here. There was a water treatment plant a mile and a half downstream from this filthy stuff. And they didn't close their intake valves either. Haven't gotten around to asking the question why yet or when. It's a mile and a half. How do you not smell this stuff? And go, think there might be a problem? Yeah, I don't know. Let's go to lunch. There's a treatment plant there, too. But here's the fun part. You can't treat this stuff away. You can't separate it out from the water. You can't precipitate it out. But I guess down in Louisville, they think that us hillbillies just walk down to the water plant with our buckets and get ourselves a bucket of water so's we can go home and take a bath every other Saturday night, whether we needs it or not. Deering Smith, Kelly Deering Smith, is spokeswoman for the Louisville Water Company. And with regard to shutting off intake valves, she said, "We don't think we need to. We really do not see a need to do that. It's a taste and odor issue. We can deal with it with the carbon at our Payne plant in Prospect. Riverbank filtration means we don't have to shut those intakes down because the ground is going to filter that compound out for us. Public health is what we do at Louisville Water." God almighty, I'd laugh if that was not so sad.
The ground is going to filter it out for us.
Oh, you mean the ground like they told people to pump the... Yeah, just dump it on the ground. Because it's got a half-life of something or another. Not entirely sure what the half-life is, but... Oh, well. Some kind of a half-life, right? For those... The last paragraph of the WDRB.com story, and again, thanks to Corey for sending this along. For those who don't want to take any chances, Kroger says all Louisville and Southern Indiana stores will receive extra deliveries of bottled water this weekend. Oh, God. Love that dirty water. Merciful, merciful sake. So, see what I mean? It's going to be thorn in the side Thursday. But I'm still having a hard time getting away from this story. Oh, I know. Chris Christie's a horse's rear end. But, geez, hasn't everybody else talked about that almost to exhaustion? And that's not even the number one up at the top of the stacks thorn in the side for this thorn in the side Thursday. Oh, no. Not even a little bit. You may recall. By the way, thank you very kindly to Sal. Sal just got us started toward meeting Paul from Parts Unknown's challenge this evening, followed by Diane. And between the two of them, we need only $45 more to meet Paul from Parts Unknown's challenge, which would be... tremendous. Marty, how about Clayton Kershaw is way overpaid? I know. I'm sorry. I can't. How do I even put words to this? I'm sitting here looking at my Facebook and my email day in, day out for the last week. Remember, it was a week ago that, or maybe more than a week ago, that people started saying, something stinks. And the water smelled funny, and the water tasted funny. And people just, people in power, people that are imbued with the public trust, just sat there. See, there's a part of me that thinks that pitchforks and torches should probably be involved in all of this. But then I recognize that we're pretty much beaten people here, and we don't do pitchforks and torches anymore. No. But that's not the number one thorn in the side. Oh, by the way, since the word went out for people to flush their lines and either send it back into the sewage system, which would then send the stuff back into the river, or dump it out on the ground if they've got a septic system. Genius. That's just genius. Another 100 human beings have shown up at area hospitals because of the adverse effects of being exposed to this toxin, which, remember, would not be here at all if it were not for the coal industry. Do you get a sense for why it is I'm having a hard time letting go of this? Under ordinary circumstances, I've got at least a dozen stories right in front of me where we could just take off running. And maybe you would prefer that I did. But in the moment that we do that, we turn our backs on something that is already awful and may very well get worse. I mean, there's even an aspect to the CDC warning that came out last night about 8 o'clock, two-thirds of the way through the program, there's even an element to that that I find disturbing. You may recall that about 8 p.m., and Sandra, via Twitter, alerted me to this. Last night at about 8 p.m., the Centers for Disease Control said that out of an abundance of caution, they were advising pregnant women within the 9-county affected area to not drink any of this water and to continue drinking bottled water until it had been shown that there is none of this stuff in the water at all. And when I first read that, I thought, well, okay, that's probably wise for mothers to be. But then I got to thinking, I'll bet that has something to do, something, with, how to put this? Is there an anti-abortion tie-in with that? Can you see where my mind is going? It's okay if we poison granddaddies. It's okay if we poison mothers who have already born their children. It's okay if we poison grandmothers. It's okay if we poison toddlers. You begin to see? And the extremely dodgy language being used even by the Centers for Disease Control is disturbing. A story by Ken Ward and David Gutman in today's Charleston Gazette, wvgazette.com, says, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control today defended its one part per million threshold for acceptable levels of crude MCHM, saying it was made using cautious conservative estimates. Well, you can say your estimates are cautious and conservative all day long, but if you don't have much, if you don't have anything in the way of real world data upon which to base those cautious conservative estimates, then they're not even estimates. They're guesstimates. And then the second paragraph. Agency officials also conceded that, quote, it's almost as if we're learning as we go in dealing with this ongoing chemical disaster related to the coal industry in West Virginia. Almost as if we are learning as we go. Steve is put off by my reference to pitchforks and torches. Dear Bob, I'm appalled you'd even say such a thing. You forgot the guillotines. Dadgummit, I'm trying to be a nonviolent man of... Fritz in Arkansas, by email, bobkincaid@gmail.com. I don't give that out enough. Bob Kincaid, BOBKINCAID, @gmail.com. Fritz says, you just mentioned Kroger getting supplies of bottled water. A thought. What about these grocery stores that cut their own meat on site, i.e. steaks, they grind hamburger, and then clean the meat markets and produce markets with this tainted water? Scary shit, I'd say. By the way, every morning I've been listening to the 7:35 to 7:50 a.m. Eastern Standard Time local newscast from West Virginia Public Radio via TuneIn Radio app, and it seems that the story has been somewhat downplayed in some respects, as in not to overly alarm folks. That's exactly what it is, Fritz. If you sit and think about what's going on here for any amount of time at all, it becomes straight-up horror movie terrifying, only that there's no end to it where the lights come up, everybody feels better, nobody got shot for texting, and we all go home. Fritz continues, perhaps the PTB at WVPR are worried that the coal barons' wives will withhold pledges for the station, since you mentioned once it still plays classical music during middays. Our public radio station here has the NPR News talk programs during the day between Morning Edition and All Things Considered. Keeping y'all in West Virginia in my thoughts. Signed, Fritz in Arkansas. Make no mistake, that is a concern. I mean, this kind of stuff is all over the place. There's a little, and this is just something that was repeated to me. I have no attribution. This is just what it is. There's a little theater not too far from me that would not allow The Last Mountain, the documentary with Robert Kennedy Jr., would not allow The Last Mountain to be shown because a board member of that community theater was deeply tied up as a friend of coal. It is pervasive, and it is pernicious. But anyway, thank you, Fritz, and thank you, Steve. Alan the trucker says, what about Cincinnati, Ohio? It seems like the chemicals would have made it there before Louisville, Kentucky. Well, it did. And out of an abundance of caution, the people in Cincinnati, Ohio, they closed the intake valves for their public water supply so none of this poison could reach them. Now the plume has gone past. Louisville seems to feel, I guess, more confident about their ability to do something which has thus far been said to be chemically impossible. Yeah. But yes, the Centers for Disease Control admits that they are learning as they go when it comes to dealing with a massive toxification of the public drinking water supply. Because after 2001, I thought we really beefed up our concern for public infrastructure and things. But that's only if it was being done by a moose limb, right? Well, see, we've kept Charleston's public water supply from being poisoned by the terrorists. Ooh, I think we could have a conversation about that, don't you? It took a while, apparently. The Charleston Gazette repeatedly asked the CDC to make available someone who could explain what this one part per million standard means. And I did see reference down on my Facebook feed that downstream they're talking about a safe level of one part per billion. But I guess a miracle happened, because the news article says, then this morning, after refusing a repeated interview request since Friday, the Centers for Disease Control made Dr. Vikas Kapil, chief medical officer for the agency's National Center for Environmental Health, available for an interview with the Gazette. Kapil, K-A-P-I-L, I'm probably just mauling the name, but Dr. Kapil stressed that new recommendations to the state were made out of an abundance of caution, and said that pregnant women who have been drinking the water since the do not use orders began to be lifted on Monday should not, as opposed to could not, or will not, which are far more affirmative statements, should not expect any adverse effects from having subjected their babies in the womb to some degree of methyl cyclohexane methanol. Takes me back to something that Michael Pollan, the great food writer, said not too long back. If your grandma didn't cook with it, it doesn't need to be in your body. Yes, it's all precious. Yes, yes. Oh, mommy's going to drink a glass of water now with some methyl cyclohexane methanol. What the? No. But this is, they should not expect adverse effects. They should not. we would not expect that the levels we're talking about, that we would expect any adverse health effects, either for the mom or their baby or their unborn babies. But again, it's almost as if they're learning as they go. Step right up. Step right up. The roulette wheel is now spinning. Place your bets. Place your bets. Place the bets. Place the bets. Yep. Red, black, either one. Put your bet down. Maybe your baby's okay. Maybe your baby's not okay. They're learning as they go. La jeu s'en fait. La jeu s'en fait. La jeu s'en fait. Everything going on here is based upon the one part per million figure that's based on some incomplete, unpublished, not particularly well peer-reviewed at all scientific standards from the manufacturer. Dr. Richard Dennison, whom I quoted, I believe, on Monday over at Environmental Defense Fund, he said the one part per million standard, quote, raises the question as to whether the new animal studies suggest a potential for developmental toxicity or a related effect. Clearly, something prompted the issuance of the advisory. This new development, I believe, lends even greater weight to the need for immediate public release of available studies and methodology. And then this, which will conveniently lead into our lead contender for Thorn in the Side Thursday, because she just couldn't wait until Moran Monday, and I don't appreciate it. On Thursday afternoon, Senator Joe Manchin, D, WV, great hair, and Representative Shelley Moore Capito, R, WV, her buddy Archmore, her daddy Archmore in a bad wig, wrote requesting of... requesting of governmental officials, especially at the CDC, particularly Dr. Thomas Frieden. Dr. Thomas Frieden said, since making the initial one part per million calculation, scientists have obtained additional animal studies about MCHM. These are currently being reviewed. Does this mean the science, that somebody went out and did the science? Or they obtained, what is obtained additional studies? Does this mean that Eastman Chemical Company finally came forward and said, oh yeah, we got another one. Oh, we forgot about it. It was sitting over behind the dartboard that we haven't hung up yet, down in the break room. Jesus. So there's Dr. Frieden saying, well, they were prompted to revise, right? Okay. Enter Joe Manchin and Representative Shelley Moore Capito. Interesting that those two are mentioned together as having jointly written to Dr. Frieden, insofar as she is running for the Senate seat soon to be vacated by Senator John D. Rockefeller IV, also known as J. Rockefeller, who is not running for re-election this November. And Joe is heartily supporting his old, old friend of the family, Republican Shelley Moore, who is Archmore's daughter. Archmore being, of course, the most corrupt man ever to hold the governor's office in the state of West Virginia. Look him up. So, Joe and Shelley trying to look senatorial, wrote off to Dr. Frieden wanting the detailed methodology for how they reached their conclusions. They also want to know what information led the CDC to change the advisory to suggest that pregnant women should not drink the water. They also want to know the date when the Centers for Disease Control became worried about lower-level exposure in pregnant women. They also seek to know how confident the Centers for Disease Control are in that one part per million standard. Here's an excerpt from the letter. Sit down. Duct tape. tennis ball. You know the drill. It is particularly concerning that as many as 150,000 people who had been under a do-not-use water order were told that their water supply was safe for use before the CDC's recommendation that pregnant women should consider an alternate drinking water source. We are deeply disappointed in the CDC for recommending a screening level before receiving all relevant studies and information, which has resulted in confusion, fear, and mistrust among Kanawha Valley residents. Bless his heart, Joe Manchin. Butter would not melt in his mouth. Okay, so back up. The night that this spill was announced, Shelley Moore, Capito, was eagerly voting to strip the EPA of more of its power to do the job that EPA is charged with doing and barely does as it is because of all the other right-wing assaults on the EPA. Yes, she was. They're deeply disappointed in the CDC for recommending the one part per million level. However, they have never, up to this point in time, and even as I speak, voiced so much as one iota of concern for their own constituents who drink poisoned water, who breathe poisoned air, and who live in places that are subjected to poison on a daily basis by the very industry which they hold dear to their bosoms. Not once. I remind you that there is a growing body of scientific research, which you can read over at acheact.org, acheact.org, that suggests that just living near mountaintop removal operations is hazardous to your health. It is hazardous to the health of unborn babies, about whom Joe and Shelley purport to be concerned here. It is hazardous to the health of mothers carrying those unborn babies. It's hazardous to the health of grandmothers, grandfathers, fathers, mothers, aunts, uncles, brothers, sisters, cousins, neighbors. It's hazardous to everybody who lives around it. And Joe Manchin will not to this day even acknowledge the existence, the mere bare existence of these studies. But by God, he wants to know what the methodology of the CDC was. Man, that takes some chutzpah, right? Solid brass chutzpah. A reminder coming in from Dr. John. He says, don't forget, too, that both Capito and Manchin get money from American Water PAC. Money is the best kind of speech, right? Asks Dr. John. Along those lines, remember what Dylan said. Money doesn't talk. It swears. It does. It does. It does indeed. Question coming in from Irish Dave. Can the half-baked Alaskan see one part per million out her back door? Irish Dave also asked, by the way, doesn't Paul from Parts Unknown realize that real West Virginians don't have no truck with them French words like guillotine? All right. Liberals! Alan the Trucker noting, the chemical I smelled when I drove through Charleston the other night and smelled an awful smell around the Elk River, could that have been a chemical to destroy the other chemical? No. No, it really could. And if you're not used to Charleston, there's all kinds of awful smells there that people just stop smelling. You know what? This stuff may have been, and all the evidence leads one to conclude that it probably was out and about a couple of days at least before the case. And folks don't notice it. Or if they notice it, they generally don't complain because, well, it stinks. The chemical industry is all around Charleston. And there's all kinds of noxious fumes. One of those treasured little stories that was that parents tell themselves as their children grow older concerned one of the first times that I, as an actual talking infant, was with them as we drove up the mountain and as we drove by a chemical plant at Bell, the DuPont plant, which is forever putting off noxious stinks. It was said that I stuck my tongue out and said, "Wash it, Mama," because there was a bad taste in my mouth. After a while, you stop saying that, and it's just what your world smells like. So, without ever having been remotely concerned about the well-being of people in mountaintop removal zones, because freedom, profit, whatever, suddenly, Shelley Moore, who was attacking the EPA even as this disaster was unfolding, is concerned and appalled and shocked. This woman has no more business being in the Senate of the United States than a hog does have business wearing a Sunday suit. In fact, you could probably make an argument in favor of the hog. But again, that was just the segue. That's just the segue to Shelley Moore Capito's real home run. I mean, this is precious. And there is something about community disasters that brings out the stupid in people. And people who have a native oversupply of the stupid in the first place apparently just burble with it. Witness Shelley Moore Capito. Now again, she was in Washington, D.C. casting a vote against the agency that is charged with protecting the well-being of American citizens from things like chemical leaks. She wasn't in Charleston. Okay, are we clear on that? Good. Well, she did an interview. She did an interview with a friendly media outfit. You may have heard Devin and I talking about Metro News and John Racy. Remember, John Racy is the guy who owns Metro News and he's a millionaire. He spends most of his time living in Florida, but he's got a building in Morgantown, West Virginia. And back when they said no smoking in public buildings no smoking order, they are now the rule and not the exception in this country. He said it was just like being loaded on a cattle car and shipped off to Auschwitz, not being able to smoke in it. Yeah. That John Racy. Well, he owns Metro News, and it is a coal-friendly, poison-friendly, softball-lobbing news outfit. And so I'm sure that Shelley Moore Capito felt right at home answering questions. So she was asked, basically, for her take on this disaster. I want to give everybody a fair chance. Duct tape, tennis ball, because I'd even do something about my legs if I were you, because there will be furniture kicking involved as well. Reminiscent of I want my life back during the BP Horizon disaster. Reminiscent of Gary Southern saying he'd had a very long day while sucking on a bottle of bottled water while people in Charleston, West Virginia had none. I give you now the indomitable spirit of Shelley Moore Capito.
It was not. We had a pipe break in our home on Friday with the contaminated water pouring into our lower level of our house. So I'm really, we've been deeper into this than some other folks.
So how's your house smell right now?
Well, you know, it smells, but it's going out the door. I think I got my 1,000 gallons in very quickly. I guess it had frozen earlier in the week, and then once we had that warm weather, it broke, and it happened to break on the day that this whole thing, or the day after this whole thing occurred.
You got that? Really, you got that? You missed the lead-in. I'm sorry about that. She begins this statement by saying, it's a little amusing now. At the time, it was not. I've read this story a dozen times. I knew that it was going to have a prominent place in the program this evening. And I'm still not okay with that. I'm gobsmacked. How in heaven's name, even though it's perhaps arguably topically different, do you begin any discussion involving a disaster in which 300,000 people have been deprived of access to the single most, well, second most important, equally co-important, element of life, water, by saying, it's a little amusing now? How utterly disassociated must you be from your constituents? How completely disconnected must one be from one's essential humanity? She's talking about a pipe that froze and burst that the help then fixed. Okay, because don't for a minute think that Shelley Moore Capito rounded up some CPVC and ran down and started fixing the water main in the basement. One more time.
Out there in the Charleston area, and you might find this, it's a little amusing now. At the time, it was not. We had a pipe break in our home on Friday.
With
the contaminated water pouring into our lower level of our house. So I'm really, we've been deeper into this than some other folks.
We've been, there are 300,000 people going without water. There are 300,000 people who have been drinking water, participating in an unstructured experiment on involuntary human subjects. And this woman, who wants to be a senator from the state of West Virginia, who wants to walk in the footsteps of Robert Byrd and Jennings Randolph and Jay Rockefeller, this woman says she's deeper into it than others are. Would she consider herself deeper into it, perhaps, than a pregnant mother who showered in this stuff on Thursday morning while the stuff was running unchecked through the public water supply system? Is she deeper into it than that woman is? Is she deeper into it than the man who has worked his ass off all day long and just walked over to the tap and got himself a glass of cool, clear water with which to quench his thirst? Is she deeper into it than he is? Is she deeper into it than the grandmother in the nursing home who reaches a quaking hand out to the, her bedside table to bring the cup with the straw in it close to her aged lips in order to get a drink? Is Shelley Moore Capito deeper into it than that woman is? And in all of those instances, is it, are those things a little amusing too? If the voters of the state of West Virginia have even a shred of their own human dignity remaining about them, they will reject this woman's candidacy for the Senate of the United States as though they would reject poison in their water. Really, truly, they would. A tweet that Dr. John just passed on to me. Subject line, uh-oh, from Ken Ward Jr., who is doing... I don't know what we got to do to get this guy a Pulitzer. If he can't have one out of this coverage, then they may as well quit giving them out. Uh-oh, from Ken Ward Jr. At CDC.gov said WV crisis, quote, dynamic and evolving. Dr. John says, does that mean new water advisory coming or being considered? Or maybe, wait. Oh, no. Ken Ward says, does that mean new water advisory coming or being considered? I asked them, no answer so far. Dr. John observes, that's unsettling to say the least. Noting what she said, what Shelley Moore said about going through her 1,000 gallons in a morning, she said, Bob, the average U.S. household uses about 2,000 gallons per person per day. How big is her house? Or, I'm sorry, 2,000 gallons per person per month. How big is her house? Well, the way this is supposed to be, it was supposed to be structured, everybody in the system got a credit or will get a credit or is supposed to get a credit for 1,000 gallons in order to flush their homes. The water heater, all their lines, their taps, what have you. And so that's where that 1,000-gallon reference comes from. But here's a hint. She's not living in a shack. If we had a Democratic Party with any backbone about it whatsoever, and we don't, because the Democratic Party in the state of West Virginia is little more than a cult of personality for Joe Manchin, who will not allow this kind of thing to be done. Shelley Moore Capito would wear that deeper into this than most line, that smirky disdain of hers, that little chuckle of hers. It's a little amusing. She would wear that on top of her head like a toxic tiara. She wouldn't be able to take a step outside her house without seeing a picture of herself on a billboard with the words, "It's a little amusing." Or, "We're deeper into this than others." She was not even in West Virginia. Did you notice she didn't say anything about being in the water herself? She was using that regal "we." Yeah, the help was in the water. She called a plumber, please. Texas Betsy pointing out, you know, it won't be amusing when she goes to the doctor. I'll never forget the day that Shelley Moore Capito looked at me, my white hair, my beard, and I tried to explain to her how much in fear people are for their loved ones, little grandchildren, and whatnot. And what a nightmare mountaintop removal is in our communities. And she looked at me like I had three heads. And she said, "And you live here?" I said, "Yes, I live here. My people have been here for nine generations." And with this sort of faraway look, maybe it was a little amusing, I don't know, she said, "I just never knew there were any real West Virginians who actually opposed mountaintop removal." You see, she thought that they were all DFHs, outside agitators, don't you know? So that, you know, that's the beginning, at least, of More and Monday. Then there is a man by the name of I'm waiting for it to load here. A man by the name of Eric Wagoner. He's a real West Virginian, too. He's a professor of English at West Virginia Wesleyan College, up in, I believe, Buckhannon, West Virginia. I saw this a couple of times yesterday. Sandra sent it along. And I'm just going to read it now. Because this is so much better than anything I've said. So much more real. "My dad, a lifelong firefighter, used to teach hazardous materials response and safety classes to first responders. The first informational point he covered at the beginning of the course was how to read the classification marks on transportation tankers, the little diamond-shaped signs usually mounted on the back of the tank that announce by a numerical code what kinds of chemicals are stored in those transport vehicles and what levels and types of health risks would be associated with a spill in the case of a wreck. The first homework assignment he gave was for the firefighters to go home and stand on the main cross street in their neighborhoods and hometowns for about an hour and write down the numbers on every tag they saw pass through that intersection, then go look up the numbers. Dad said the next week when those students came back for class, invariably there'd be two or three groups of firefighters whose faces were white as flour. Professor Wagner gives a warning. He says, this is not going to be a very cogent post, I'm afraid. We're still in the middle of the mess that got made for us, and there are still a lot of things we don't know, including when the water is going to be drinkable again. I'll try to be as articulate as I can. He then recounts his story of his trip delivering water to Charleston, trying to help. He says, we can never predict what moments are going to affect us this way. And by effect, he says, I looked at the water company and I smelled the air, and suddenly I was filled, I mean filled, with a rage that was quite sudden, very unexpected, and utterly comprehensive. Aren't English majors awesome? We can never predict what moments are going to affect us this way. I'm no dewy-eyed innocent about chemical leaks. They were regular occurrences when I was a kid. And he continues and says, but something about this confluence, the way I had to bring potable water to my family from 2 hours north, the strange look of the landscape wreathed in rain and mist, the stench of a chemical that was housed directly upstream from the water company, something about all of that made me absolutely buoyant in my rage. This was not the rational anger one encounters in response to a specific wrong, nor even the righteous anger that comes from an articulate reaction to years of systematic mistreatment. This was blind animal rage, and it filled my body to the limits of my skin. And this is what I thought. To hell with you. To hell with every greed-head operator who flocked here throughout history because you wanted what we had but wanted us to go underground and get it for you. To hell with you for offering above-average wages in a place filled with workers who'd never had a decent shot at employment or education, and then treating the people you found here like just another material resource suitable for exploiting and using up and discarding when they'd outlived their usefulness. To hell with you for rigging the game so that those wages were paid in currency that was worthless everywhere but at the company store, so that all you did was let the workers hold it for a while before they went into debt they couldn't get out of. He's talking about the company store script system there. It's a reality my father lived, my grandfather, my great-grandfather. Not paid in real American money. Paid in vouchers that could only be used at the company store to buy goods at wildly inflated prices, strictly and expressly for the purpose of keeping the workforce desperate. I sometimes think that much of Milton Friedman's writing at the University of Chicago must have been derived from watching the excesses of the coal industry in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. But never mind that. Professor Wagner continues, to hell with you all for continuing, as coal became chemical, to exploit the lax, poorly enforced safety regulations here so that you could do your business in the cheapest manner possible by shortcutting the health and quality of life not only of your workers, but of everybody who lives here. To hell with every operator who ever referred to West Virginians as our neighbors. To hell with every single screw job, elected official, and politico under whose watch it all went on, who helped write those lax regulations and then turned away when even those weren't followed. To hell with you all who were supposed to be stewards of the public interest and who said and who sold us out for money, for political power. To hell with every one of you who decided that making life convenient for business meant making life dangerous for us. To hell with you for making us the eggs you had to break in order to make breakfast. To hell with everyone who ever asked me how I could stand to live in a place like this, so dirty and unhealthy and uneducated. To hell with everyone who ever asked me why people don't just leave, don't just quit, and go to one of the other thousand jobs I suppose you imagine are widely available here, like it never occurred to us. Like if only we dumb hilljacks would listen as you explained the safety hazards, we'd all suddenly recognize something that hadn't been on our radar until now. To hell with the superior attitude one so often encounters in these conversations. And usually from people who have no idea about the complexity and the long history at work in it. To hell with the person I met during my PhD work, who, within 10 seconds of finding out I was from West Virginia, congratulated me on being able to read. Stranger, wherever you are today, please know this. Standing in that room full of people, 3 feet away from you, while you smiled at your joke, I very nearly lost control over every civil checkpoint in my body, and though civility was plainly not your native tongue, I did what we have done for generations where I come from when faced with the rude stupidity. I tamped down my first response, and I managed to restrain myself from behaving in a way that would have required a deep cleaning and medical sterilization of the carpet. I did not do any of the things I wanted to, but stranger, please know how badly I wanted to do them. And as long as I'm roundhouse damning everyone, and since my own relatives worked in the coal mines, and I can therefore play the family card... Oh, you got that card too, Mr. Wagoner? Lovely, isn't it? The one that trumps everything around here. To hell with all of my fellow West Virginians who bought so deeply into the idea of avoidable personal risk and constant sacrifice as an honorable condition under which to live, that they turned that condition into a culture of perverted, twisted pride and self-righteousness to be celebrated and defended against outsiders. To hell with that insular xenophobic pathology. To hell with everyone whose only takeaway from every story about every explosion, every leak, every mine collapse is some vague and idiotic vanity in the continued endurance of West Virginians under adverse, sometimes killing circumstances. To hell with everyone, everywhere, who ever mistook suffering for honor and who ever taught that to their kids. There's nothing honorable about suffering. Nothing. To hell with you. This is the one moment in my adult life, Mr. Wagoner continues, when I have wished I could still believe in hell as an actual physical reality so that I could imagine you in it. He closes, saying, and that was what I thought. Not in those words, it came to me in a full body rush, but I think that's a reliable verbal representation of the feeling. And he continues on at greater length, closing, saying, having been made to endure fucked up air, earth, and water, we ought to be mindful of that history and make sure that history goes with us, always, into the voting booth, into the streets, into the home, into the wider world. Otherwise, to steal a line from the old hymn, and don't we love our Jesus, our stories of noble suffering around here, we'll all of us, residents and politicians and operators alike, find ourselves standing in the fire next. You can find that over, well, you can find it all over the place, but I particular, Sandra sent it to me, and I saw it at Americans Against the Tea Party, AATTP.org. A lot of truth. A lot of truth. Almost 100% 200 proof truth, in Eric Wagner's words. So it's 5 past the hour. We should probably take a break. We are now only $25 away from meeting Paul from Parts Unknown's Thorn in the Side Thursday challenge. Thanks to Tony for getting us up to 50. Deeply appreciated. Deeply. Green News Report is coming up. Brad Friedman, Desi Doyen. And then your thoughts and perhaps other stories on this Thorn in the Side Thursday. I've got a feeling Dr. John is watching Ken Ward's feed to see just exactly what that fluid and dynamic language means. We'll let you know as soon as we know. If you want to get in touch with the program, 304-658-3333 is the number. Email Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. And, of course, if you want to reach out via Skype, that's quite easy, too. My contact here is Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. And you are more than welcome to participate that way or any way of your choosing. Twitter is @BobKincaid, and Bob Kincaid is my Facebook post, presence as well. We'll be back. Light up the phones if you want to, or I'll just fill a bobster. You pick. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn.
All day I faced a barren waste without the taste of water. Cool water. Oh, Dan and I with throats burned dry and souls that cry for water, water, cool water, clear water, water. Keep a moving, Dan, don't you listen to him, Dan. He's a devil, not a man, and he spread the burning sand with water. Dan, can you see that big green tree where the water's running free and it's waiting there for me and you?
The nights are cool and I'm a fool. Each star's a pool of water.
Cool water.
But with the dawn I'll wake and yawn and care.
Moving, Dan, don't you listen to him, Dan. He's the devil, not a man, and he spread the burning sand with water. Dan, can you see that big green tree where the water's running free and it's waiting there for me and you?
The shadows sway and seem to say, tonight we pray for water.
Cool water.
And way up there he'll hear our prayer and show us where there's
water, cool, clear water. Keep 'em
moving down. Don't you listen to him, Dan. He's the devil, not a man. And he spread the burning sand with water. Dan, can you see that big green tree where the water's running free? And it's waiting there for me and you. Dan's feet are sore, he's yearning for just one thing more than water. Like me, I guess he'd like to rest where there's no quest for water. Cool, clear water.
It's Thursday, January 16th. 2014.
In many ways, it's a mega drought.
We have had aquifers dry up.
Unprecedented drought and wildfires in California.
It's like opening an oven door in your face.
Unprecedented heat shuts down Australian Open. EPA smacks down Alaska's proposed pebble mine, putting Washington, D.C. sewage to good use. Plus,
people are reporting nausea, headaches, sickness, just from the fumes that are being let out in their house as they open their lines to try to clear this crap out.
The impacts of the toxic chemical spill in West Virginia still flowing.
All of those impacts and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
These toxic chemical tanks have been inspected as recently as 1991.
This is your Green News Report.
That's like six Batmans ago.
Okay, Desi Doyen, the mess from the Freedom chemical spill in West Virginia continues. That, of course, is Freedom Industries chemical spill. Had a very interesting conversation with our friend Bob Kincaid of Head On Network, one of our Green News affiliate partners. He's in West Virginia.
Yeah, and although officials have lifted the no-use ban on tap water in phases from that chemical spill that happened last week, Bob Kincaid reports that residents say their tap water still looks, smells, and tastes contaminated.
People who have their water back on are still not comfortable with it. I was in a restaurant, and one of the individuals there said, we're not serving this stuff to anybody. It doesn't smell right, and it doesn't taste right, and we don't trust it. But then again, under the circumstances, Brad, how could you ever trust this water again?
Good point he makes there. How can you ever trust it? There are almost no laws regulating this crap, as he called it. And, of course, John Boehner in Congress said this week that he's not worried about it.
I am entirely confident that there are ample regulations already on the books to protect the health and safety of the American people.
And by the way, Mr. Boehner, that toxic poison is heading down the Elk River into the Ohio River, straight towards Cincinnati, which you represent. Let your constituents know we don't need any more regulations.
Meanwhile, on the West Coast, unprecedented is how scientists are characterizing historic drought in California. 2013 was officially the driest year on record in California. 2014 is off to an extra dry and extra hot start with a rash of rare January wildfires forcing evacuations around the state. In a press conference, Governor Jerry Brown says an official drought emergency declaration is imminent.
We have to take this drought very serious. In many ways, it's a mega drought. It's been going on for a number of years. And then we also have the prospect of global climate change, and that can affect us as well.
Yes, the National Weather Service out here in Los Angeles just issued their first red flag warning for wildfires. I should say their first red flag warning ever issued in January.
Yes, the meteorologists say this rare January heat wave is caused by an extended blocking pattern in the jet stream, something that scientists say may be related to climate change.
Our driest year ever. Now we've got 80 and 90 degree heat out here for a week. It's amazing. I know the people in the rest of the country where it's cold don't want to hear it, but this is very serious concern here on the West Coast.
And now record heat in Australia.
It really does feel like a sauna.
2013 was also the hottest year on record down under, and now they're broiling in yet another intense and prolonged heat wave. Soaring temperatures are melting roads and people's water bottles. Daytime matches at the Australian Open had to be suspended after some players and spectators collapsed in the excessive heat.
In these conditions, it's simply desperate for the players. Lots of concerns about their health.
A new report by Australia's Climate Council confirms human-caused global warming is behind the increased frequency and duration of these intense heat waves. Data showing the number of hot days in Australia has doubled since 1971.
Last year, they actually added a new color to the weather map because it got so hot they didn't have anything to specify over 110 degrees.
In Alaska, big news for tribes and fishermen opposed to the controversial proposed Pebble Mine. The Environmental Protection Agency has concluded in a new analysis that any large-scale mining operation in the fragile Bristol Bay watershed would devastate the region's ecology even in the best-case scenario and would irreparably harm the world's most prolific salmon fishery.
Congratulations to another one of our Green News Report affiliates, Shannon Moore, up there in Alaska, who has been fighting against this pebble mine for years. Well done, guys. Keep up the good work.
Finally, Washington, D.C. certainly generates a lot of shit, and it's an endlessly renewable resource. So the D.C. Water Authority has announced it is putting all that sewage to good use, building a biogas digester that will process all the shit that rolls downhill from the nation's capital, siphon off the methane gas, and generate on-site electricity to power the plant.
Wow, all the shit in D.C.?
Yeah, pretty smart idea.
That's a lot of shit. For much more on that and the rest of the shit we're covered today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, don't forget, please consider a donation to help keep the Green News Report on your public airwaves. Find us and like us on the Facebook and follow our shit 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Who was that guy? 17 minutes past the hour on our way to the halfway mark for this evening's Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. I'm going to try to do some other stuff. If I can just, I just don't remember being, okay, try, Bob. Okay, I can do that. How about some, now, did I mention, yeah, I did. See, I'm going back, 100 hospital visits by people from people just trying to flush their lines. Yeah. Well, theoretically, some percentage of those people who have shown up, and so that would make something like 850 to 900 people who have gone to the hospital since this whole disaster began. You have to figure that some percentage of them are going because maybe they've got health care now, of one form or another, be it the Medicaid expansion or probably the not-good-for-much bronze plan that's being offered here by Blue Cross Blue Shield of West Virginia, the only company participating in the sale of health insurance on the exchange for West Virginia. Well, let's take it, seeing as how at some point in time the conservatism that is floating in a 60-mile-long plume down the Ohio River, considering that at some point in time it will empty into the Mississippi River and then go swirling on down past the western border of the state of Tennessee, let's talk a little about Tennessee. I wonder if they would be responding this way. Of course they would. They're teabaggers, please. Were they in West Virginia? Yes, of course. I'm talking about State Senator May Beavers. No, really. And State Representative Mark Pody, which would make this the Pody-Beavers bill. Beavers-Pody? can't make this stuff up. They've announced that they're going to introduce joint legislation in the Tennessee Senate and House to make sure that nobody in the government, in state government in Tennessee, can help the Kenyan Muslim usurper anti-colonialist with a deep-seated hatred of white people enact his demonic Obamacare in Tennessee. Yeah. And it's really it's really worded kind of nifty when you get right down to it. Here's a little here's a little bit of audio from Beavers and Pody, a package from a Tennessee news station. Do enjoy.
A new bill seeks to ban the federal health care law in Tennessee. Legislation proposed Wednesday would make health insurance exchanges established under the Affordable Care Act illegal. Senator May Beavers and Representative Mark Pody say the measure seeks to prohibit any cooperation by the state or its agencies in implementing the federal law. Beavers called the health care law an overreach of power that the federal government does not have the constitutional authority to implement. But Representative Joanne Favors is calling this new bill against Obamacare embarrassing to the state, and she believes Tennessee's Attorney General will find it unconstitutional.
Okay, you got that? There was some real precious in that. I mean, oh my word. May Beavers and Mark Pody have decided that they are the sole arbiters of constitutionality, at least as the Constitution applies to the state of Tennessee. And never mind the, oh well, court system, Article 3 of the Constitution. Yeah, forget about it. This is a fascinating little turn on the whole overall theme of nullification, which, if anyone would care to see the real world effects of same, are free to go and visit Pittsburgh Landing, Tennessee. Had a little church there. Of course, it was named after a place in the Bible, Shiloh Church. And there were lots and lots of people who had a profound disagreement about whether or not Tennessee was going to be able to nullify the Constitution about 150 years ago. 152 and a half years ago. And they were so serious about that discussion that they decided to stay until they were put under the ground. Yeah, you can go learn about nullification at Shiloh. You can go and learn about nullification at Lookout Mountain. You can go and learn about, and maybe it would be beneficial for May Beavers and Mark Pody to go and learn about nullification. I mean, well, heck, it's right there. They don't have to go very far at all. They can just toddle right down I-65 to Franklin, Tennessee, and learn all they possibly could want to know about nullification.
The federal government does not have constitutional authority to commandeer state and local governments to enforce or implement these federal health care mandates. This legislation takes a very strong stand to resist this federal overreach of power.
Which is not, incidentally, a federal overreach of power because it has been ruled upon by the Supreme Court as not being such. Idiots. Here's the problem, though. when teabaggers sit down to do things like write them a law, can get interesting. Since these geniuses have crafted a bill that would that forbids assisting in implementing anything having to do with the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, that means that, among other things, people who were, say, employees or perhaps independent contractors within state, county, local governmental institutions would be forbidden from going to the health care exchanges in order to purchase health insurance, assuming they could afford it. And this also means that if you showed up at the hospital would then have to make inquiry of you as to where you got your insurance, and if you got your insurance through the exchange, you would have to be turned away from the hospital. You remember what Alan Grayson said? Die quickly. Yeah, really. I tell you, that much more of that culture of life that the Republicans and the teabaggers adhere to, and we're going to be in real trouble. This was all sort of deconstructed by a writer, an author by the name of, a reporter by the name of Betsy Phillips at the Nashville Scene. That's their alternative paper. She writes, "The real question, and one that Beavers and Pody haven't addressed, is what no powers, assets, employees, agents, or contractors of the state or its local government subdivisions, including higher education institutions, can be used to implement or administer the federal health care program means. Specifically, what implement or administer in this context means. Say this law passes and I bought my insurance through the Obamacare website. Now, say I show up at the University of Tennessee Medical Center, a higher education institution, with my Obamacare procured insurance and an emergency. Could the hospital take my insurance, or would that be aiding in the implementation, since I don't really practically have insurance unless a hospital will take it, or administering, since the hospital's billing department will have to work with my Obamacare-procured insurance company in order to get paid, of the Affordable Care Act?" Betsy Phillips continues, "Since the law empowers the General Assembly to enact sanctions, fines, and penalties for violation of the proposed law and gives the state's attorney general the right to file a lawsuit against violators, will hospitals have to figure out not only if patients have insurance, but how they got it before they risk treating them?" This really is a situation in which these dead from the neck up right-wingers, repiglickens, birchers, deathers, tenthers, booger-eaters, various and sundry teabaggers are, what? Trying to kill the whole country? Or at least the portion that, if you go to the healthcare.gov, which you have to go through even to qualify for TennCare, which is their Medicaid program, does that mean you're somehow tainted? I'm licked. I'm whipped on this. Dear God. What do May Beavers and Mark Pody do when they're not sitting around fulminating and pontificating about people being corrupted by that, that their Obamacare? You get the idea. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's John. How you doing?
Hey, John, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing okay. I got no answer for you for what they do when they're not fulminating about Obamacare, but I imagine it's something that we don't really want to shine too bright a light on.
Well, you know, fulminate of mercury can be dangerous. Can you imagine what fulminate of teabagger is?
Fulminate of teabagger. I think, you know, I think there's websites where you have to pay a pretty penny to see that. not that you would want to.
Right. Yeah, I'm not into pody beavers.
Oh, okay. Let's shift gears here.
Yeah, do let's before it gets any worse.
Yeah, no, really, just, I wanted to say, you sort of apologized at the beginning of the program for you know, staying on the water crisis, but I personally, I'm glad you are, because honestly, I'm not getting this from any other places. I mean, you've been a sort of a one-man evangelism band here on you know, on MSNBC and then on Brad Friedman and all that, and I really appreciate that. So I'm glad you've been talking a lot about it, actually.
Well, I know what everybody else is doing, kind of, because I watch my feed and everything. And apparently, I'm supposed to be absolutely transfixed by the Chris Christie scandal, and a variety of other stuff, and it's just not happening for me.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's something wrong with my brain.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, I can muster up outrage at a couple of things at once. You know, I guess unlike the for-profit media. I hate the Christie story, and it, you know, it makes him look like the bully that he is, and there's tragic consequences. For part of it, though, I'm kind of sad if this really does derail him, because, you know, I'm honestly a little bit more frightened of people like Rand Paul or Ryan or somebody else. I figure Christie's somebody that wouldn't be much of a challenge in the next election cycle. Honestly, I don't think his little shtick plays in the rest of the country. But those other guys, yeah. So I guess I'm sort of...
Yeah, they're going to love him. They'd love him in South Carolina.
Oh, right, exactly. But, you know, Paul and Ryan and all them. And, oh, ooh, Paul and Ryan. Anyway. Wow. But they, I don't know, they've got that creepy appeal that I think might be more difficult to get over. But anyway, for what it's worth, I'm glad you're on it. And I think that this really... Boy brings home, was it Sandra Steingraber's point about everybody being downstream from something?
Yep.
Yeah.
She's absolutely right. And of course, she's been hollering that from the rooftops for years now, because it was years ago now that she was on this program, when the documentary was being made of her book Living Downstream. And you know, the fact of the matter is, on the one hand, you have a disaster that is created by the routine negligence culture that has been fostered by these deregulatory teabaggers and Republicans and whatnot.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, there's stuff under here that I haven't even talked about with nearly the depth that it deserves. We have something out there called the Toxic Substances Control Act that is designed, or was originally thought, to be something whereby all these chemicals that are used around human populations would eventually be tested for a general understanding of what it is they do to human systems.
Right.
And not necessarily in an immoral, involuntary study on 300,000 human subjects.
Yeah.
Well, the story then is, why was that gutted? You know, where's the for-profit media reporter when John Boehner says, I'm sure we've got enough regulations? Okay, name one. Name one, well, John. You know what I mean?
The whole fact is that they escaped regulation, isn't it? Because they, what did the DEP say? That they didn't have to regulate or inspect this because of some technicality of how they operate.
Right, and they said they back in 2008, they filed their tier 2 paperwork. So even that takes you down a sort of linguistic rabbit hole, John, insofar as, how about that? A toxic chemical in tanks a mile and a half upstream from the public water intake, and it's tier 2. What do you got to do to get onto tier 1?
Well, what about this chemical, too? I get the impression this is something that was developed or invented by this Eastman outfit. Is that...
Yes.
Because it's new and it's proprietary, I assume. And so that means that they get control of all the testing and all the study of it? I mean, I'm shocked that, you know, Ken Ward and the Charleston Gazette folks have been doing really amazing reporting on this. And you know, they keep saying, well, we asked the CDC about this, and they kept referring questions about the toxicity to the company that deals with it. How can we do that? What is the point of the CDC if they can't access toxic substances that directly threaten people's health?
Well, but you see, I think you've just identified, John, one of the essential problems with the way we approach these things, and that is that we are in a reactionary mode and not a proactive mode. The CDC has to wait until somebody gets poisoned, and then we go and try to see if we can keep other people from being poisoned, as opposed to saying, you don't get to use this around human populations until you can prove, which is, in essence, the precautionary principle. And that's, you know, that's how you get to here. And it's things like the gutting of the Toxic Substances Control Act that puts that that puts us in that position. And, you know, moreover, the you know, that one study, and now the CDC has alluded to a second study that I guess maybe the company, you know, like I said, found, you know, back behind the Coke machine or something, that upon which they have further based their one part per million standard. But again, the methodology is not out there, and frankly, I have no respect for Joe Manchin or Shelley Moore when they say that, by God, they want to see the methodology and they want to see the reports. Well, the CDC is the wrong people to be asking for that. You need to ask Eastman Chemical. But if Joe did that or Shelley did that, they might not write them a check this election cycle.
Well, yeah, exactly. And the money is really important. I think that, a couple things. I've actually been thinking about comparisons with plane crashes in terms of this and what you're saying and protection. You know, it seems like every regulation on airlines and aircraft design follows some sort of tragedy that probably should have been foreseen. It's not tragedy, disaster. That probably should have been foreseen, but wasn't. And in the wake of them, new regulations appear, like the value jet crash with the oxygen canisters
right.
And all the law. So it seems like there's a major disconnect here, because we are allowing, it seems, companies to sort of do whatever they want, because we can't regulate them until people die or until people get sickened, and then it's a catch-up game.
Okay, so from a sociological standpoint, what underpins, John, what underpins that philosophical approach?
Well, it's in political terms, it's conservatism.
And in cultural or social terms, isn't it the idea that the ability of the chemical company to make money and have lovely share profits is more important than the ability of a mother to bring her wanted baby to term?
Because we're all individuals, including corporations. We're all people. We're all these atomized subjects that have no connection to anyone else, and there's no point in looking out for each other. Yeah, I mean, to broaden it more,
yeah.
It's a nasty philosophy, and it takes hold in so many ways, and this is a particularly bad example of it. But I just think that, you know, that all that talk from Manchin and Capito, that's nonsense. I mean, they don't want to see the methodology. They don't know what methodology is. It's not even methodology. It's methods, but whatever. And I think you're absolutely right. If they criticize the company, that doesn't play well to the base, because we're all taught that, oh, you know, what business does is fine and what government does is bad. Well, damn it, sometimes what government does is good. And this is a great case. And the problem here isn't the CDC, the EPA regulation. The problem is that they weren't allowed to operate there as they are supposed to. That's the problem.
Right. And this business with this letter from Capito and Manchin is nothing, I mean, absolutely nothing but deflection. Because what they're doing by this is trying to make it appear that somehow the CDC dropped the ball, when in point of fact, it was people like Joe Manchin and Shelley Moore who others like them, who helped get this stuff into the stream of commerce. Now, I'm certainly no chemist, I'm no engineer, I'm not an analyst, none of these things. But
yeah.
just from a common understanding of business, let's understand this. There was, John, an abundance of testing on this material, this methyl cyclohexane methanol. There was a boatload of testing on it. You know what the testing was for? To determine how efficiently it would separate clay and rock and dirt from coal.
Right.
Because they couldn't have made any money on it if it didn't work.
Right.
So they tested it extensively. I have no doubt to make sure that they could. And then there was the press release from a few years ago where people they proudly ballyhooed the fact that this stuff was, you know, this stuff really worked well. And the reason this stuff comes on the market, just by way of a little bit of background, is because other substances had been used in the past. John, does the phrase synfuel, S-Y-N-F-U-E-L, mean anything to you?
No, it doesn't.
I think it was during the Clinton administration.
Mm-hmm.
The concept of synfuels was advanced because this was this was another one of those installments in the never-ending saga of ending American dependence on foreign oil. Okay,
right.
We've heard that drumbeat time and time and time again.
Sure.
So they come up with this concept of synfuels by which under which producers of energy or energy-producing substances would receive tax credits for creating synthetic fuels.
Okay.
Well, the coal industry being the coal industry, and forever looking for a loophole, sort of like Fields sitting with his Bible on his porch in his later years, looking for a loophole, realized that this could be transformed into a dodge.
Right.
That it could be a way, because, you know, if you're running a mountaintop removal operation, you've got a bunch of diesel fuel sitting around.
Sure.
And so the long and the short of it is, coal companies would spray coal with diesel fuel, I'm not kidding, and then get tax credits for having created a syn fuel. And so a number of other chemicals had been used in the coal washing and coal prep process. This stuff was brought along because it was more efficient and theoretically made life a little bit easier for the coal companies.
Okay.
So that's, you know, and there has to be massive amounts of testing and examination of the efficacy of this stuff to do what it was designed to do. And once they cleared it, well, Freedom Industries becomes the local retail outlet for this stuff. And they send tanker trucks all over central Appalachia to coal operations to deliver this stuff to preparation plants. And then and here's the fun part. You want to know whether you can treat this stuff once it's in water? Don't ask the CDC, John. Ask Alpha Natural Resources. Ask Patriot Coal. Ask Peabody. Ask any of these outfits.
What do they do with it?
Well, they wash the coal with it, and they use this stuff, and then they use it and reuse it until it's so gummed up that they can no longer use it. And it's not like they send it off to some cleaning plant where they separate the water out of it and recycle the water. No, they pump all of it up into a sludge dam.
Oh, it just sits. It's one of the compounds in the sludge dam. It just sits there.
Yeah, or I'm sure in past years they've simply injected it into old mine shafts where it leaches into people's wells like it did in Printer.
Right.
And in all these years that this has been happening, there's not been one peep from Joe Manchin or Shelley Moore or Nick Rahal or Earl Ray Tomlin or any of these coal-fired goons about what that was doing to human beings. Even when Joe Manchin cut the ribbon on the new water supply to Printer, he didn't acknowledge that their water had been ruined by the coal industry he so dearly loves.
Well, because he says that this has nothing to do with the coal industry, right? Of course it doesn't. Is that playing down there at all, that ridiculous meme?
No, I don't even think the coal industry believes it.
Oh,
I mean, even the friends of coal aren't buying. I mean, hell, these people, and frankly, even the captives inside the coal industry, you know, they know they're working around noxious toxic chemicals, and they take all the precautions that they possibly can. But this stuff is in the communities. It's been pumped underground. It's been pumped into sludge dams. Good God.
Well, I guess my question is with all the attention on this, I wonder. I mean, is there going to be some kind of improvement in the way that this substance and maybe others are detected, and some knowledge of what it does to people? I mean, I'm terrified by the idea of you know, this whole one part per million. Oh, it's fine to drink, but then the CDC comes out and says, you know, if you're pregnant, don't drink it. Don't really look at it all that hard. Certainly don't touch it. So. I'm wondering if they know something now, or they're starting to suspect something that is not quite as public.
Well, I think the CDC being the CDC, and I'm just guessing here, this is pure speculation,
yeah.
John.
Yeah.
One of the first people to call them out was Dr. Richard Dennison, who has some 29 years experience, and he's at the Environmental Defense Fund. I shared his blog post the other night, and he just points out that this is just bad science.
Yeah, exactly. That struck a chord with me, definitely.
And you certainly have a more of a science background than do I. But if you had one study on lethality, wouldn't you want a study that has to do, you know, wouldn't you want to establish the standard for no effects at all? I mean, that's, for instance, I mean, there's creepy regulations out there. There are, for instance, regulations on the number of rat hairs that can be in chocolate, okay?
Right.
But that is because the standard has been established that there is a bottom threshold under which a certain amount of rat hair is okay in the chocolate. The science has actually been done.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, none of that is present in this issue. There is no minimum standard for exposure to this chemical. And the fact that there are 100 people wound up at the hospital after they were told it was and it was safe to flush their lines, bless their hearts. The Charleston Gazette on their webpage still has that map up that shows the areas getting blue, and the legend says do not use blue, water is safe. Now I don't know who the webmaster guy is for the WVGazette.com website. But I would find, and they're probably just lifting that from West Virginia American Water.
Yeah.
But I think, well, I don't know. If I was in the risk management division of West Virginia American Water, I would phrase that some other way. Because it's we're on day four now of that legend saying water is safe.
Yeah.
They have no way of saying that. And frankly, West Virginia American Water has gotten a big, big pass out of all of this because they're being, as I said, they're being portrayed as some sort of innocent victim. Well, if you're running a water supply, don't you want to be aware of your circumstances? How much more of a high degree of public trust, and you know, the kind of thing that we refer to as a fiduciary relationship, how much more of a fiduciary relationship can there be than being the sole provider of fresh water to a community in excess of 500,000 human beings?
Well, Bob, listen, think about your language right there, though. And, you know, sorry, but you said public trust, and you said provide water. You know, they are not public, and they don't provide anything. I'm sure you can attest to that.
Right? Oh, good God. Well, yeah, you're absolutely right, John, because the only fiduciary relationship that West Virginia American Water perceives is the fiduciary relationship that its board of directors and officers holds to the shareholders, which is the problem that is endemic to the entire corporate structural system. They owe no other duty. They have no duty of morals. They have no duty of ethics.
Exactly, and they are not accountable. Even, you know, a business or company might be accountable in the sense that, you know, consumers can vote with their dollars. They can choose a different provider of whatever widget they're consuming if there's a problem with it. I doubt that you all are in that situation. Can you just change water companies if you want to?
No, sorry, there's no free market for the water.
There's no free market for the water. And as a privately held corporation, they are not accountable to to anybody.
Well, let me ask you this. This is a legal issue, but you're familiar. I know you are because of the nature of some of the work you do. You're familiar with the concept of eminent domain.
Absolutely.
Where the state says that we are going to step in and intrude on people's private property rights because there is an overarching state compelling reason for doing so.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we had even one responsible member of the legislature of the state of West Virginia, wouldn't you think that maybe it might be appropriate to at least introduce a bill exercising eminent domain over West Virginia American Water Company and taking it over in the name of the state of West Virginia so that it could truly be a function of the public trust?
Yeah. Wow, I cannot imagine in this landscape that ever happened. I mean, that would be a precedent setting, wouldn't it? I can't think of a case where that's ever happened.
I can't either, but you know, I hate to say desperate times call for desperate measures because this should not be a desperate measure. At least the way I think, and I'm guessing the way you think, John, there shouldn't be a private company in this country that is in charge of the ability of human beings to have access to one of the essential elements of life.
No. No, I completely agree, but I mean, I'm wondering now how many states, municipalities, regions are in the exact same situation.
Well, there are municipal water companies.
Oh yeah, we use one here. Yeah.
You
don't pay a company. You know, for water, Jesus.
And so when you pay your water bill, you know that your bill is the money you pay on your bill, you know, is staying in your community.
Yes.
And you know that it's going to pay the people who maintain the water system.
Right.
And that when upgrades are needed, well, you know what? You can go to the voters and say, listen, we need to replace a bunch of old mains, and you can give the reason and say, January or March or when the hell ever, you can have a referendum for a bond issue for that is backed by the full faith and credit of the political subdivision, right?
Absolutely, we can do that. But more than that, as residents of this municipality, we can run for positions of power that oversee the workings of said water board to make sure that shit like this doesn't happen. And that's the key thing. I mean, I think that's the public benefit. I mean, water, of course, it should be a public resource, but the idea that your water is being sold to you by a private company that's unaccountable to the people that it serves, I mean, step back for a second. It's ludicrous, and what's happening now seems like a completely predictable outcome.
I mean, I'm guessing people like our buddy Scott in Sweden, if he was to walk around through his neighborhood and say, you know, my pals back in West Virginia have their water sold to them by a for-profit company that answers only to its shareholders, I'm guessing maybe those good Swedes would say, what? Because it's got to... Profitizing the essence of life, there's got to be somewhere on the planet that is viewed as absolute madness. Because it is.
I would hope so. I think they might say something like whatever the Swedish equivalent of "That doesn't sound like freedom" would be.
Yeah, exactly. Let me take you one other place, and this is a journalism question, okay?
Please.
I have relied heavily for the past week, as have many, I suppose, on the reporting of the Charleston Gazette, who are doing yeoman work. I have nothing but absolute respect for the work that Ken Ward and the rest of that team have been doing.
Agreed.
And this is a journalism ethics question, which is going to run headlong up against the boys in the profit division of the publishing house.
Okay.
In the midst of an ongoing civic crisis of monumental proportions, such as this is, would it not be incumbent upon someone who holds, again, in the public trust, you might argue, the Fourth Estate, to turn off the damn paywall?
they got a paywall going? I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah, you get to read 12 articles, whatever, a month, and then you're done.
Oh, I guess I haven't hit my limit yet. Damn. Well, I can... I'm not trying
to be an ass toward the Gazette here. Again, I want to make sure they've done awesome work. But I think this is a question we ask in regard to what it means to have a viable civil society.
Would you consider that the state newspaper?
It is absolutely the state newspaper of record.
Yeah. State paper of record. I got to say, I mean, if it was me, the paywall would be down. I can tell you there's a very large newspaper company in the country that has sort of a standing policy that, you know, whenever one of their local papers is covering a big story of intense public interest like this, that they do drop the paywall temporarily. So, I mean, that model is out there, and the technology to do it exists, and it's pretty easy. I'm very surprised that they're not doing that.
I went to update before airtime this evening and clicked and, you know, please register or log in with an electronic subscription.
Yeah. That's very surprising to me. I think that's a real oversight. I would imagine that there are people in the newsroom, the you know, reporters and editors, who are saying that very same thing, and it's probably running up against, like you said, the accounting folks.
Yeah.
I mean, look, journalists hate paywalls. I'll tell you. You know.
Oh, they want to be read, right?
Yeah, they want to be read, and they think that what they're doing is in the public interest, and that's very much against it. You know, it's the suits that love paywalls.
Yeah. Well, John, I thank you for all of this conversation.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for what you're doing, Bob. I appreciate it, and I'll get out of the way and let other folks talk.
Well, I tell you what, anytime, and I sincerely appreciate your input on things like this, because I don't feel like the old man of the mountain or any sort of an authority on stuff like this, and I need, you know, sometimes I just need to... I need to make sure that I haven't, because in the last weeks I felt like sometimes I was losing my mind. You know, when I realized that this experiment was now going on again on 300,000 people, it was like, I don't know, it was like somebody started running a newsreel inside my head of all the times that scientific experimentation has been done on human test subjects without their knowledge or their consent. And it was a newsreel of horror, because these things don't work out well. And I guess one last question before you do go, we are after all the country that invented the Berlin airlift.
Yeah,
we created the Marshall Plan for picking Europe up out of the rubble of the Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
Why couldn't we leave the damn water off and just fly? I mean. The flights in and out of Charleston were getting canceled anyway because pilots' contracts could not be honored because there was no water, you know, for airline business and everything. Why couldn't we be landing C-130s full of water, portable showers, everything? Why couldn't we be doing that instead of rushing to turn the water back on before we even knew if it was safe to do so?
You know, why couldn't we get trailers into New Orleans after Katrina? Why couldn't we get folks out of the Superdome? We seem to have lost the ability to pull together and do things for the common good because we don't care about that.
Yeah.
God, that's depressing.
Yeah, it kind of is.
You're right. I hear what you're saying.
Well, John, thanks a bunch.
All right. Cheers, Bob. Take care.
Later. Bye now. Bye. Dr. John. And I don't, you know, I don't ask that rhetorically. How many times do we have to see this? The response to Katrina, the response to BP, this response. Everything has been, oh, Jesus. I remember when people were getting sick from the fumes inside their FEMA trailers. We actually had, we had people on the program talking about it. Kate writes in, question, program update, please. I missed your announcements yesterday. When are you heading to D.C.? Will you be broadcasting from there? I was meaning to bring that up again this evening, but this is as good a time as any. Yeah, I'm heading to D.C. on Wednesday next, which means there will be no program on Wednesday. Then on Thursday morning, I will be broadcasting live from the Families USA Healthcare for All conference. I'll be doing 3 hours of just nonstop interviews, bang, 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 bang. And then we will rerun those during the ordinary time slot for the program here. So that takes care of Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. The following week, I'm going to be doing, I mean, like I said, I haven't been in D.C. to do any ache work since July. It has been impossible. Right now, the ache campaign is running on a shoestring, and the best voice to have up there is the voice of Bo Webb. And so he's been, my God, the time he's put in up there. But he needs spelled a little bit, so I had hoped, I plan to at least put in a week of hardcore pounding the pavement, halls of Congress kind of stuff. I'm obsessed with getting this bill introduced in the Senate. And so I will do my dead-level best to broadcast every night from the ACE headquarters during the regular slot, but you also have a pretty good idea of, well, you may remember the technical difficulties we've run up against from time to time. So there's that. But I'll do my dead level best to be on the air. And I say, and it's worth mentioning because I know that when I travel like this, our attempts to stay level with fundraising go pretty much to hell. So with that in mind in advance, yeah. And by the way, we are still $25 away from meeting Paul from Parts Unknown's $75 challenge this evening. Kate continues, thank you for the profs, to hell with them. His description of his rage is what I feel when I'm out doing volunteer work. When I see 1,000 people huddled in a cold, rainy parking lot in East Tennessee waiting for health care, well, it defies description. Or when I worked in the lower Ninth Ward in New Orleans, I experienced impotent rage when I witnessed ethnic cleansing. Or when I see all the heavy equipment rolling across the prairie heading to fracking fields here in Montana, well, what's a girl to do? Often, I can only come back home and sit in silence for months at a time, reread all my favorite authors, and eat chocolate. Uh-oh. Don't tell me about writing to those in power, calling them, or parking in front of their offices. Everyone's been bought and paid for. Mother Gaia will get hers. Chaos is always self-correcting. Wazza, are we in for it? Washing for rat hair in my chocolate. Signed, Kate, in a state of disbelief. And that's physical and, I think, both physical and metaphorical disbelief. And a Mr. Stress update via Jug of Punch. Bill is all moved in now. His primary computer was not working. His secondary one was working. Yesterday, AT&T showed up and installed UVerse. His computer was not able to connect to the internet. Friends used their smart devices to complete the registration process and confirmed the internet was available. After work yesterday, I drove up to Bill's apartment. I brought some software to install. After about an hour, I was able to get the internet off and running on the computer. I then brought up the live stream of the horn. Bill should be listening tonight. His landline will be installed tomorrow. Thank you. Thank you very much for letting us know. So, hi, Bill. Even though you can't call in yet, we're here. We're thinking of you. And we look forward to when you can. So here at 4 minutes past the hour, we will take a little break. And you, in turn, can light up the phones if you so wish. 304-658-3333 on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. Email Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid at gmail.com. Bob Kincaid on Twitter, at Bob Kincaid on Twitter. Just had a note in from Isaac. He says, Bob, isn't Congress on break during the time you're going to be there? Just because the actual elected officials are not in there does not mean the staff are not still working. Sometimes you can get more work done then and reach people more easily then than you can when they're running back and forth from the office buildings into the Capitol. I'm not sure what the schedule is exactly right now. And also by Twitter, via Twitter, Jason notes, when things have the value, referring back to what Dr. John and I were talking about, when things have the value, people don't. Till writes in and says, Bob, the government does not intervene on our part in disasters because we are second-class citizens and corporations are first-class citizens. When they say they want to drown the government of, by, and for us in the bathtub, they mean us. It's us they want to drown. Drown, poison, blow up. I saw a number earlier today. It has been established, I think, in the state of Ohio that fracking has caused more than 100 earthquakes. What did Kate say a few minutes ago? Mother Gaia will get hers. Yes, indeed. All right, so break on the way. And after that, your calls or my filibobster, either way works fine. Works fine by me. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn.
Of our soul in the bargain. Well, you'll put a price on every piece of the most beautiful place in the world. And we'll watch our future float down the river, standing on the red carpet we rolled out for you. With your one eye on these mountains and one foot out the door, I have been here long enough to know one thing for sure. You'll take as much as we will give you, and then you'll take some more. With your one eye on these mountains and your one foot out the
That is from a disc released many, many years ago now. It's probably 10 years old. Moving Mountains. A number of various artists. That is a tune called The Most Beautiful Place in the World. It's got that album also has a number of audio clips on it. I thought this might be valuable, because this is an archival recording of a voice that can no longer be heard.
My name is Julia Bonds. I'm from Coal River, West Virginia, originally from Marfork. I moved 2 years ago because Massey Energy Coal Company moved into my hollow at Marfork. I've lived around coal mining all my life. My father, great-grandfather, his father were all coal miners, and this is an outlaw coal company. They moved in, and neighbors started moving out. We had a lot of coal truck traffic. They built a sludge dam, a coal waste dam, that holds back the water and the chemicals that they use to wash and prepare the coal in. This is an earthen dam that is as tall as the Grand Coulee Dam and holds 7 billion gallons of chemically laden coal waste. And there was a lot of black water releases in that time period. That's the black water looked almost like thick pea soup, but it was black. And those releases became more numerous. And I would talk to some of the workers that worked for this coal company, and they would make remarks to me such as, "Have you ever thought about moving? You know, that dam's going to end up, that pond's going to end up in your yard one day. Might wipe you out." And I started thinking about that. But the thing that really got me was my grandson, when he was 6 years old. He climbed down into a stream that my family had used for seven generations, probably more, and was playing in the stream. And I looked down into the stream, and my grandson was standing in the middle of the stream, and he said, "Mama, what's wrong with these fish?" And he was standing there in his chubby little beautiful hands holding dead fish in both hands, and dead fish was floating around the stream. And of course, I started screaming, get out, you know, and he was never again allowed back in that stream. A chemical that they used to treat the coal with had leaked into a stream and killed all fish, but it's not dangerous to humans, I was told. If I contaminate my children's air and my children's water, then I am the worst. That's the worst form of child abuse that there is.
Amen.
Yes, that's the worst form of child abuse. That I am sucking the earth dry of oil and coal and gas. I'm leaving nothing for my children but the waste.
Leaving nothing for my children but the waste. Now, see, again, that is a good 10 years ago. Maybe 11, 12. And we just passed the anniversary this month of Judy Bonds having lost her personal battle against the toxins of the coal industry. And see, there was never even an atomic instant of concern on the part of Joe Manchin or Shelley Moore or Nick Rahal or for people like Judy and Judy and others like her in that community. That black water release that killed the fish. Andrew is a man grown now. He just doesn't have a grandma anymore. He has her. He'll never forget her. But it sure would be nice to have her. Because, see, Judy wouldn't shrink from anything in this current disaster. She would be screaming from the rooftops, "Looky here! Looky here! This has been going on for years!" And nobody was interested before. And what you're going to see, if the Joe Manchins and Shelley Moores of the world could just get people to forget this existed, that this even happened, that would be their fondest dream. Barring that, it becomes critical that it be miscast as some sort of failure of government or the product of, you know, just some bad luck. Look, Freedom Industries, some of those folks may wind up seeing the inside of a jail. I'd still say if you called Harris in Reno, it's 9-1 against. But if they do, they're going to be the Judas goats. they're not going to be the reason this all happened. Judy moved from her ancestral home, but she didn't move far. No. She stood and fought. And her last words were, "Fight harder. Beat the bastards." She was the one who told me 10, 11 years ago, if we don't stop it here, it's going to grow outside of the Coal River Valley in southern West Virginia, and then boom, there it was, right here, 2 miles from my house. That's what they call them, black water spills. Spills, it's just a spill. But that's what's in those sludge impoundments. That's what's in those vast seas of toxic waste that you can see from space. And about which Joe Manchin cares not a tinker's damn, and nor does Shelley Moore. And there is room to criticize the CDC. But to try to make the CDC the patsy for this rogue outlaw industry is entirely misguided. A paragraph from Ken Ward and David Gutman's story, CDC, West Virginia Water Crisis, Dynamic and Evolving Event, posted just a little bit ago, says, Kappel said that the CDC stands by its initial recommendation, and then there's this sort of editorial aside in the report, made in the absence of any regulatory standards or established public health guidance, but that the agency is searching for additional information that might help scientists refine their work. The language between those two hash marks, made in the absence of any regulatory standards or established public health guidance, that the fact that there isn't any of that is not the Centers for Disease Control's fault. It is probably safe to say that as of Wednesday of last week, the Centers for Disease Control had no idea even of the existence of methyl cyclohexane methanol. None. Because people like Joe Manchin and Shelley Moore and David McKinley have worked hand over fist to make sure that nothing, 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 nothing can interfere with the precious operations of their owners in the coal industry. And it's not like stop operations. Nothing can be permitted to even vaguely, marginally, barely inconvenience these outlaws. Sometimes in my more forgiving moments, I am inclined to almost feel sorry for the likes of Joe Manchin and Shelley Moore. Because I have something they will never have. You have something they will never have. You have that thing which is as near to freedom as is available in this country. We may act upon an informed basis in our own best interests. We may act freely. Those two, and Earl Ray Tomlin and others like them, cannot. They are not free. They are captives. Their first concern, their last concern, what they think about when they arise in the morning and what they think about when they lay down at night has always got to be what will be best for my owners in the coal industry. And can you imagine how that must feel? There must, from time to time, come moments when they despise their very existences. There are things that the creature comforts of a well-heeled life cannot cover up. Joe Manchin and Shelley Moore say nothing about the health crisis in southern West Virginia because their owners do not want them to. Speak, Joe. Speak. Lay down, Joe. Lay down. Good, Shelley. Good. We may not have much. Some more than others, others less. But we do not have to answer to an owner, a master, every day of our existence. You can almost, like I said, almost feel a degree for sympathy for them. Until you come bebopping back to reality and realize that their willing servitude has real-world consequences for people who pay the price with their dreams, with their hopes, with their yearnings, with the things that they think about for children and grandchildren, because that's where so much hope resides. And that is a hell of a price to have to pay. Minutes past the hour. I am happy to announce that Paul from Parts Unknown's challenge has been met. Thank you very much, Asa. And thank you very much, Thomas. That gets us past tonight. And for that, well, there's no describing that. What else? Anything? Wow. I'm trying to get my head somewhere else. And I do appreciate your patience in my need to just stay after this issue. Just by way of follow-up, either Mr. Ward or Mr. Gutman also interviewed Laura Vandenberg. She's an assistant professor of environmental health at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst, talking about the fact that one of the largest problems out of this disaster is the absence of knowledge, the absence of data, the absence of research, the absence of anything that can be reliably told to people who are affected, Professor Vandenberg said, as much as this stinks, this is the way it works for almost all chemicals. I say again, almost all chemicals. So don't kid yourself into thinking that this is a West Virginia problem. It matters not where you are in the United States of America. Somewhere, very likely, somewhere near you, or running past you, or in your streets, or on your rail lines, you are living a life made deliberately oblivious to poisons that were they made graphically realizable would keep you from sleeping anymore. And it's not an accident. It's by design. It's reality. Another headline. Dr. Rahil Khan is a member of the West Virginia chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics. And Dr. Khan spoke up to the Kanawha County Board of Health and said, listen, if pregnant women shouldn't be drinking the tap water, as a pediatrician, I'm telling you, neither should small children. And he implored the Kanawha-Charleston Board of Health to extend the do not drink at all warning to children under 3 years of age. I'm guessing it should probably be extended to children up to the point they're not children anymore, and then it should be extended to all human beings. And even to animals over whom one has the ability to deliver water. That's kind of an easy conclusion to reach if you are making the conclusion based upon morality and ethics. If you're making your decisions based, on the other hand, on the need to recoup and recover from possible negative impacts to share prices, well, that's a terrifying prospect. You can almost hear the corporate execs from American Water and West Virginia American Water going, shut up! Shut up! Shut up, Doc! Jesus, Dr. Khan! What are you trying to do to us here? We're trying to make a dollar! God! Oh, dear God, please tell me no. Tweet coming in from Isaac. We'll just have to see what this says. Freedom Industries says the chemical spill is not their fault at all. Let me guess. EPA's fault? Oh. Daggum that God. God done it. Nearly a week after Freedom Industries last spoke publicly, the company broke its silence Thursday evening, proposing a theory, this from the Charleston Gazette, which interestingly I had no problem opening because it was sent to me in a tweet. Nearly a week after Freedom Industries last spoke publicly, The company broke its silence Thursday evening, proposing a theory that its crude MCHM chemical leak was caused at least in part by a broken water pipe uphill from its property, and the water from the broken pipe flowed under the tank farm, and then the water froze during the cold temperatures, you know, the below zero stuff, about five below. And when the water froze and expanded, it punctured the tank from below. The unnamed source said, "Looks like somebody took a sharp object and stuck it through the bottom." Act of God. Because, you know, God sent those cold temperatures, right? You know, here in West Virginia, we worship the daylights out of him. You would think that maybe he could give us a break once in a while. Well, it looks like somebody took a sharp object and stuck it through the bottom. Well, maybe that can give rise to a new false flag theory. Alex Jones! That ought to be fun. 25 minutes before the hour. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey. Good evening.
Good evening.
Yes, how are you?
Hey, Bill.
Yeah, I guess it is.
It sounds to me like it is.
Whatever's left of my memory, it is, yeah. Man, oh, man, I have to go away from the radio and what do I find? When did this disaster start? Monday?
This phase of the disaster did when they started telling people it's okay to drink the water.
Oh yeah.
The disaster itself got started on a week ago tonight.
Poor West Virginia. Do they start with every new disaster in your state?
Well, we have rather made ourselves a petri dish for that sort of thing, haven't we, Bill?
Well, Bob, when I was living in the projects down there, we had some of our best football games and fistfights were with guys from West Virginia. And now I can understand why. No wonder you guys are as tough as you were. To the guys, you know, the guys, the guy, that was a joke we used to have from a guy I used to run a TV show up here who was from West Virginia. And his line was, the guys that made it all the way to Cleveland had the better cars. The other guys' cars broke down in Akron. Guys were breaking down on the way to I guess after coal working with rubber looked like a piece of cake, huh?
Probably. Yeah, I mean, you know, at least you're not a mile underground standing up to your knees in water and wondering when something was going to explode.
Well, on my dad's side, I was told that the guy was an Eastern Orthodox priest. I found out later he was a Roman Catholic who quit. And he was working in a mining town full of people from Austria-Hungary in Pennsylvania. He was running a parish there. And my dad's father went back to Europe after he was born here. And when he came back, he went to the mines for a while, and he ended up coming. He worked there, and my dad said, for a miserable short time, and said, this is terrible. And he came up and worked at Collinwood Railroad all his life, and that's how he ended up in Cleveland. Work, man. Because I often wondered, like, I don't know if most people even understand the beginnings of your state.
Oh, you mean, born in the fires of the Civil War?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that really true, Bob?
No, absolutely. Virginia seceded from the Union, and then a bunch of people decided to secede from Virginia, and they made it stick.
Was it a positive thing or not?
It
was positive in the idea.
Well, positive or negative was not necessarily the metric that was used at the time, Bill. The question was, would it be advantageous, useful, expedient for the Union? And on June the 20th, 1863, Abraham Lincoln had decided that it would be. Because then he got to recognize the government of the state of West Virginia as the government of Virginia.
Yeah, okay. There was so much BS going on that we never hear about in history class. You know, that's why I'd love to give me about 2 hours with the professor just to ask questions. You know,
when you get all your stuff up and running a little bit better, Bill. If you want a lovely detailed explanation of the origins of the state of West Virginia, June the 20th, 2013, the archive at White Rose Society.
Yeah.
Is a long discussion with Professor Keith Lilly, who does the origins of West Virginia from a historic standpoint better than anybody I know. And that's all right there.
Well, the only thing I know about the beginnings of the war was that Bobby Lee got his ass kicked by Rosecrans and a couple of minor bloodlettings in the state of West Virginia.
Well, if I just start driving east on US 60 up over Sewell Mountain, I'll come to a historic marker called Traveler's Rest.
Yep.
And that is apparently where he stopped to water, you know, because everywhere that Robert E. Lee stopped and took a leak is some sort of hallowed ground. And he gave Traveler a drink of water somewhere along the trail here.
Yeah. Well, there's been some books written in recent years that have not been real positive about his, you know, some of his tactics and strategies. He was caught in the middle of a change of mentality, you know. The offensive, take the offensive, and, you know what that meant in those years.
Yeah.
Not a good thing. But it's just, you know, and the thing is, I know here, we've had algae blooms in Lake Erie and other inland lakes that fishermen knew about. And not good things either. I mean, the Helicopter River started on fire.
Right.
Burned one time because of the up and down that river was steel mills and rubber plants, and not rubber, but Ohio. You know, I'm an old man. Standard Oil of Ohio, you know.
Absolutely.
What is it now, BP? It's BP now, is it not?
I thought it all got wrapped up into Exxon. Maybe I was wrong.
Okay. Yeah, I knew it was somebody else, you know, after Rockefeller sold. I mean, that's there was Standard Oil in New Jersey, and a brand name for gasoline in Cleveland area was sold, S-O-H-O, you know, S-Ohio.
Yes, Ohio. I remember seeing those.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a big seller here, you know. Because that was, I'll tell you, the truth about commercial gasoline was all garbage, you know. And it was all the advertising in that business is enough to make you, Bob, it's like everything else in this country. I mean, let's face it, ABC makes a better brand of paper napkin and toilet paper than XYZ. Yeah, sure it does.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like the running gag we have out of that movie Idiocracy. You know, we talk about Brondo, the thirst mutilator. And why do you like it? Well, it's got electrolytes.
Oh, jeez.
You know.
Yeah, I was shocked. I happened to catch the show last night for the first time in ages, and I almost fell off the damn chair with the stories you were telling me. The things that are going on and the people are being asked to buy. I guess they think we're stupider than we are. Or I don't know.
Well, let me divert just for a minute. You're in your new digs, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's different. Musicians Towers is up here right near Cleveland Heights in the Coventry area, which was the hip area of the city at one point. And my first wife and I bought a house right 10 minutes from here or less. And I like the area, but this building is, we had there was a ton of refugees into the U.S. from the former Soviet Union in the 70s. I don't know if people are aware of that or not. But there's probably more Russian speakers in this building than there are English speakers. Of course, you could say that about a lot of American schools. There's a lot of speakers of all kind of languages other than English. Even the people that's, even the ones that studied great school English. Some don't. Hell, my family, we said the word hate in my house, my mother would slap us. My mother was very similar to the president's mother. You study, you fat little bastard. And, of course, I followed her advice, and I picked up clarinet and then harmonica, and I studied my ass off. Unfortunately, it wasn't in school, Bob. My education is, on paper, is dead nothing. But I was in the old American style. You know what it was. Because I would pick up a book and read it, go to the library, and find something and read the damn thing. You read two or three of them, and between the three, you might get one that's half right, half correct. I mean, when you talk, I mean, this petrifies me in some ways, but after spending enough time reading fishing mags and stuff, I was pretty aware of, hell, there was a time when if you took a fish out of Lake Erie, you didn't want to eat it.
No, no.
You know, it was poisoned. It was destroyed. In the Cuyahoga River, the famous burning river, I mean, it caught fire in the
city. Well, unless I'm mistaken, Bill, I think at one point in time, the Elk River, the same place that this poison got dumped into, at one point in time, the Elk River caught fire.
Yeah. Yeah. I just don't understand. You know, I've all often looked at my buddies that I grew up with from West Virginia, and I said, now I know why these guys are tougher than hell. It was a bunch of guys you loved to play football with, but you didn't want to get into a fight with. It was dead combat when you were, and that's for 15-year-olds. I don't mean knives and clubs and guns. I mean, you battled it out with somebody, straight up fist fighting and maybe a foot here and there. But, they were just tough guys, and workers. These cats would get jobs in rubber plants and steel mills and outwork you, you know, just out crazily outwork it. I mean, there's a respect level there that is still in me, but it's still one that when I look around at the whole country anymore, Bob, I've lost so much belief in this system. It hurts. I've lost so much belief in the leadership that it hurts. You were talking about last night. You guys were talking about the combat in the labor when Billy Mitchell and company.
Yeah,
I never liked the man too much. By the way,
it's hard to get warm. It's hard to get warm fuzzy feelings about somebody who wants to bomb his own fellow citizens, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's difficult. It's like the famous. You ever see the famous pictures of MacArthur standing there next to Ike? And Ike's wearing jodhpurs, if I one of no, it wasn't Ike was wearing. It was the other old man, MacArthur, wearing those riding pants. I think it was in the picture. And they were driving out the bonus marchers.
Yeah.
There's a very good book you can get. I had it on CD from the library on the bonus march itself, and what a thing that was! What an endeavor that was by these guys trying to go in to get their bonus from the First World War because they were financially starving. I mean, see, the Americans don't. What people don't know about the Depression in this country makes me hurt. Because Bob, I'm afraid it's not going to hurt me because I'll be sleeping. I hope by then, before that hits. But if it hits, it's going to be tough on them.
I think that's why I don't want to convey this as some sort of West Virginia story. Just as, you know, I've never wanted to tell people about mountaintop removal because it's a West Virginia story or an Appalachia story.
It's the beginning of a real horrible story.
Yeah, I mean, this thing, the plume of this poison will hit Louisville tomorrow. And they think they can handle it. They think that they can actually filter this poison out of water. They're going to leave their intakes open in Louisville, Bill.
Oh, that's crazy because the problem is, Bob, it can happen there. What was the line from a song about it can happen there? New York, New York, was it? That had a line about it because it happens there, it can happen anywhere.
Yeah.
because you talk about Bhopal, which, you know, in those days I was so concentrated in growing up that I didn't get buried in that story.
Well, we came within minutes of having our own Bhopal a few years ago in the Kanawha Valley.
Yeah.
With the very same chemical, methyl isocyanate.
Yeah, that stuff will... If it goes one place, it'll go any place. And that's the hard part to get people to understand. That this stuff is like rodents. It travels.
Exactly.
And it can travel everywhere. And I know it's scary, and it's you know, it sounds like you're trying to horrify people. No, you're just telling them the truth. And the truth is...
I happen to believe that people have the right to know what they're living with in their world.
Yeah.
And this is a case of that.
Here's this thing, Jim would talk about the third campaign in Belgium, what's that YPRES name, which I can never pronounce?
Ypres.
Yeah, thank you. I think the British fought a campaign there over a half a million killed and wounded to gain about 4.5 miles of territory. So human beings seem to find a way to peace and war if it's stupid, we'll find a way to do it.
Well, unfortunately, you're right.
I've done it myself.
Indeed. Well, I'm going to try to get a couple more calls in here, Bill. You want to stay on hold just to finish out the program?
No, I've got it on my old computer. My older one is working. The newer version crapped out. I'll have to have that looked at, but I think it's dead meat. I don't know whoever came over to... Because the guy who was... Our friend was supposed to be here to do it, and some other guy jumped the job of hooking it up. Hooked up my new...
Well, I have no doubt it'll be right in short order, Bill. Well, it's awful. It is. I cannot tell you how relieved and happy I am and the whole Horn family is to know that you're in your own digs.
I'm growing real fond of this bunch. There isn't a thing I can say this. I haven't heard anybody on the radio who sounded like listen to Rush Limbaugh or other folks like that. I'll let you go. I'll keep on listening. Thanks.
All right. Take care, Bill.
I'll turn off the phone here and go back to, thanks.
All right. Sounds good. We'll talk to you soon, Bill. Mr. Stress, Bill. Calling from New Digs, there in Cleveland. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, this is Alan.
Hey, Alan, how are you?
Pretty good. How about you?
Getting by. I saw your note earlier about what you're paying for that affordable health care. You want to share that with folks?
Oh, yeah, $362 a month and with a $6,000 deductible. That sounds wonderful, doesn't it?
You'll be a while catching up with that deductible, won't you, Alan?
I know. Oh, it's crazy. That's under the Obamacare, so I don't know what went wrong.
The insurance companies went wrong. They're getting a lot of welfare money to use to screw people.
Uh-huh. Oh, shucks. Yeah.
And by welfare, of course, I mean corporate welfare.
I'm for single payer myself, always been. Just like Poland has.
Yeah.
All places.
Uh-huh. Poland, Canada, Cuba, the UK, you know.
Yeah, and they were completely amazed that we don't have a health care system here. Well, the reason why I called, I have two simple questions.
Okay.
Is the bottled water that the West Virginians are getting or having to drink now, who's paying for it?
The stuff that was brought in by FEMA, we the people are paying for.
Okay. But not the chemical company or not the water company.
Oh, no. We wouldn't want to impose.
Okay. And what about the medical bills? People have to go to the hospital because of this.
Yeah, good luck.
Oh, me.
I'm looking at an article here, the one that Isaac sent along, and no one will yet say who the insurance carrier is for Freedom Industries.
Oh, man.
But we do have some new information buried way, 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 way down in the bottom of the story. Everybody's heard about Dennis Farrell, and everybody's heard about Carl Kennedy, the Coke dealer, who is no longer with the company. And everybody saw Gary Southern sipping on his water bottle. But it turns out that with the turnaround, you know, all those companies were dissolved on December the 31st, 2013, and reconstituted in the new year as a new entity, with Freedom Industries being the what's called the surviving entity in merger language. Well, it turns out now that the entire outfit is all owned by an entity called Chemstream, C-H-E-M-S-T-R-E-A-M, Chemstream Holdings, Alan. And they are based in Katanning, Pennsylvania. And Chemstream Holdings is owned by a person by the name of J. Clifford Forrest. And it just turns out, after all of this business about how Earl Ray Tomlin and various and sundry other colocrats and colicans talking about how this has nothing to do with coal. Well, the principal owner of Chemstream Holdings, which is the principal owner of Freedom Industries, J. Clifford Forrest, is also the owner of something called Rosebud Mining.
Oh.
So I guess the lie has finally been put to the no connection to coal business.
Oh. So that must be a big name in West Virginia, Rosebud, huh?
What do you want to bet he fancies himself a an Orson Welles fan, or maybe he fancies himself a Western Pennsylvania version of Charles Foster Kane.
I thought I heard that name before.
Yeah. Well, I got to get. Sorry, I got to you so late, but it's good to hear from you, Alan. I got to roll out of here, but don't be a stranger, okay?
Okay. Nice show. Have a good.
Thank you kindly. Drive safe. Drive careful.
Okay. All right. Bye.
Bye now. Our buddy Alan the trucker out there on the highways and byways. So it is time to get out of here. Thanks, everybody, for meeting Paul from Parts Unknown's Throwing Inside Thursday challenge. It makes moving into Friday a lot easier, and it makes anticipating what's coming in the next couple of weeks a little better. Thank you, because you are what keeps all of this going, this conversation, this ongoing discussion. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox down in Australia, up in Australia. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acheact.org, acheact.org. Go there to learn about what's been going on and what's been done to people in the mountaintop removal sacrifice zone of Central Appalachia for over a decade now. And then take action and help us end mountaintop removal. And always, 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 Gina. It's not working. So we won't play the outro music. Funny how that happens sometimes. But anyway, yeah, Gina, it's all for you. And Rick Smith is next on the horn. Good night, y'all.